Welcome to Here's to Your Health with Joshua Lane. Here's to Your Health discusses the current thinking in wellness, bringing you the most influential thinkers in beauty, fitness, and longevity. Your host, Joshua Lane, was part of the Dr. Ann Wigmore team that helped bring wheatgrass, sprouts, and raw foods to a worldwide audience. And now the host of Here's to Your Health, Joshua Lane.
Welcome to this edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your host, Joshua Lane. I'm happy to say my guest today is Bill Tabner and his father, Val Tabner, and they have the Ball Chain Manufacturing in Westchester, New York, and they are regular contributors to the show, and they are selling us now through Bonafide Masks, the KN95 masks we were all using during COVID-19, and also they have a long history of manufacturing important products for the U.S. military and have done so for a very long time. So it's nice to have him on the show. Bill Tabner, welcome to Here's to Your Health.
Hey, Josh, how are you? It's great to be back.
Thank you. Very happy to have you on the show.
I hope all is well.
Yeah, everything's very good. Also happy to have your father, Val Tabner, on the show as well. Now, you have Ball Chain Manufacturing in Westchester, New York, and you've actually a family-owned business, I think fourth generation now leadership, and you've been in round since 1938. And what was it that you were originally known for in manufacturing?
So our company started back in the 1930s, and we make a product called ball chains. The chains that you see on ceiling fans, military dog tags, you'll see it on coach handbags, it's in toilets like Kohler and American Standard toilets, light poles, roller shades, and you actually will see it, if you look around, you'll see it in a lot of different places. We make several million feet of it a week here in the U.S. in Mount Vernon, New York, and actually we're the sole remaining U.S. manufacturer of it. And my dad's on the line today as well, so I'd like to see if he could add some color and just maybe a little history to how the company started and his involvement as well.
That sounds very good. Mr. Tabner, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, sir.
Our company, as Bill mentioned, started in the late 30s. It started, my father had graduated from NYU Engineering in the early 30s, worked for a while, it was during the Depression. So he worked as a tool and die maker, as a machinist and as a tool maker. These companies started one machine. The machine was housed in the garage behind the house in the Bronx on Hill Avenue. It's right next to or behind PS 68. It was in the Evenwald section of the Northeast Bronx. The main products at that point were keychains. Bill had mentioned a chain that was used on a coach handbag, but the other uses were for plumbing chains. Every sink, every most sinks, many bathtubs all had a stopper in it. They didn't have that little doodad that we have today that opens and closes the valve that lets the water in and out. The plumbing chain was, one part was attached to the sink, the other part was attached to the stopper. The other use of the chain was I'll give you one use that I don't think anybody does this anymore. It has zoot suits, and those
right.
That was a long length of chain that went from the belt to was hooked onto the belt to the it went down to the shoe and came up and went into somebody's pocket. So it was an oddity, but not that we depended on our business at the time for Zeus's, but that was just, it's just an odd.
It was a fashion statement in the early 40s, right? Yeah, Zoot Suits, right. Okay.
This was in the late 30s.
Okay, late 30s, all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the house in the Bronx backed up to PS 68. It was a playground there. I remember that as really young. And the remember the Victory Gardens during World War II. There was a part of the playground that was dirt, and people would have gardens in there where they'd grow vegetables. World War II. Again, this was the Northeast Bronx during those years. It wasn't as dense as it is today. People actually had chickens.
Right, right. Yeah, it was more rural, actually, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it truly was. And every neighborhood had a butcher shop. They had their little grocery store. Actually, people coming by the cart, and they'd have a spring scale that they'd hang up the back of the cart, and they'd weigh whatever it was selling in this spring scale piece. It was a simpler time.
Right.
In his, but in those years, people didn't drive and travel as much. It was more local with station.
Right.
Everybody got into the car, into the station wagon.
Right. Well, people didn't.
You had a car.
People couldn't afford cars. Now, you also, I guess, really widely known for all the ball chain, and I understand a lot of the influential fashion houses, you know, use your ball chain products. But before we go into the fashion houses, how did you develop the ball chain that is used by all U.S. military personnel?
Well, it came from the basic ball chain usage was originally with the light pole. There was a chain from the light that turned it off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the chain came from. The military end use, they used a stainless steel chain in case something happened to the soldier. Chain would be your dog tag chain would be on the soldier, be tags on it, and it would be used to identify the unfortunate soldier.
Mm-hmm.
It would be made out of stainless, so it wouldn't break whatever else happened or deteriorate if there was a heat or a fire or something like that.
And may I ask, what year...
We made it good.
What year was it that you started manufacturing that for the U.S. military?
Would be in the beginning of sometime in World War II.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of work, though. We not only made chain, we did a lot of work as a for... Republic aircraft
mm-hmm.
in Long Island.
Sure.
We made parts for them.
Right.
Whatever they needed that we could possibly make into our tool room. It wasn't ball chain. It was parts for the aircraft. Probably the motor, the engine, the distributor. And... we would make the parts as would many, 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 many other small shops. And we were a real small shop at that point. It was my grandfather, my father, and a couple other people in the place.
Right, right. And when did ball chain manufacture? Our guest is Val Tabner. Mr. Tabner, is the son of the founders of Ball Chain Manufacturing, founded in the Bronx in 1938. When did Ball Chain really grow? I mean, your son Bill's on the show regularly. He says you now have about 100 employees. When did you get to be that big?
We got to that size probably during the 90s, late in the 90s and to 2000. Bill was Bill diversified the place. Not only made ball chains, but he went into other things. Bonafide Mass, you name it, Bill was moved in all different directions.
And Ball Chain, I'm sorry, so you have the contract for the, chains that the U.S. military uses, and maybe it's a state secret, how many feet of ball chain does the U.S. military use per year?
I'm here. I'll jump in. Yeah, sure. So basically right now, since we're the only U.S. manufacturer of ball chains, that's why we're making the change to the military.
Right.
And I hate to say this, but we don't discuss any of
right.
Our
I apologize. I really shouldn't have asked that.
Don't apologize. It's one of those things, whether you're a small company, big company, medium company, an individual, or a corporation, we always basically respect that, and we don't discuss somebody else's business with others.
Right.
And getting into that, that's one of the important things, and I appreciate my dad taking the time to be on the show today. It's always, I always love hearing the story and how we grew up in the Bronx, and, that's part of what we do here, and the mass thing, and that's why it fits so nicely with us, and I believe that's how and why we differentiated ourselves so well in the marketplace, just because my brother's Jim and my brother Val, we're always brought up to do things the right way. So, treat people like you want to be treated yourself. Do it the right way. Be good to your word. My dad always, the majority of his business was always done with a handshake. And that's sort of the way, the world doesn't work that way anymore. But that's sort of the way we like to work. If we tell somebody we're going to do something, we do it. But our customers can always count on us to do it the right way, no matter how difficult it is for us. That's what we're going to do. So those values that we were all brought up on and that our business foundation was built on, that's how we run all of our companies. And my dad had touched on diversification before, and that's, it's been, I don't want to say our secret sauce, but it's, it's part of what we do. We've diversified in the sense that we've got into different markets in turn with the chain, because it's a very diverse use. The same chain that you see in the toilet that's made from stainless steel, we make it out of sterling silver, and it's, in a Tiffany type of company. So it's, there are very few products that come out of the toilet and go into high-end jewelry type, store. But it's, but we've added finished goods. We've added, many years ago when people started to move their business in the manufacturing for all products in the U.S. over to China, that also had a big effect on our company, because we used to make a lot of chains that we used to ship to the Midwest and up to companies up in Providence that used to produce charms and tags and stuff like that. And then, they'd use our ball chains to attach them and wear them as jewelry and stuff like that. All of a sudden, that dried up pretty quickly because they shuttered their manufacturing, unfortunately, and they started to bring in things in from China. And naturally, because they're bringing in the tags, they're also bringing in the chains. So that's one of the reasons. So we started to then start making dog tags, custom logo printed tags in house, so we'd have create more demand for our chain. So that's just one of the things. We also have a product line called Shimmer Screen, where we make larger ball chains, and people use the chains as curtains and partitions, and that division, it's pretty neat. It's you can see the website at shimmerscreen.com. That's S-H-I-M-M-E-R screen.com, shimmerscreen.com. One of our other divisions is called logotags.com, logotags.com. We obviously have the Bonafide masks. We last year bought a T-shirt and screen printing and embroidery company, and then added a bunch of new machinery in there. So we're doing direct-to-garment printing. So that actually has been a nice business that accompanies our logo tags business. We paint our chain in-house. We bought a painting company last year as well. So we've been busy, and we're proud of what we do here. We're proud of all the products that we bring. We're very, very proud of our work with the military. We have the utmost respect for all of our military personnel, and we love working with them, and just proud of all of what we do. So, my dad and I really appreciate the opportunity to tell a little bit of our story over here, and how we do things, and it's nice, and I actually love hearing, and I appreciate my dad taking the time to be on this call with us.
Oh, sure. Our guest has been Bill Tabner, and his father, Val Tabner, whose father, actually, Val Tabner's dad, actually helped, or actually formed their company, Ball Chain Manufacturing, in the Bronx in 1938, and helped during the war effort in important ways, and continue to be in the forefront. And they do supply us now with the KN95 masks, and they have more than 30 million of them in stock for use throughout the United States. This is Josh Lane. You're listening to Here's to Your Health. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Aloe Life for beautiful skin locks in the moisture, plus contains a natural growth factor. Aloe Life is America's premium aloe vera brand, richest in the active ingredients you need to get the full benefit of aloe vera for healthier looking skin. More beautiful skin from Aloe Life. Naturally clear skin. Look for Aloe Life. Aloe Life Juice Concentrate and Skin Gel work together. Sold nationally at your favorite natural food store and pharmacy. And note, there's a big difference in aloe products. Friends, people ask me, why does Aloe Life Concentrate or tablets support body wellness? And I tell them what Aloe Life products do for my family. Everything. Digestion to skin support and healthier energy too. Aloe Life for body wellness support. Go to AloeLife.com or call 1-800-414-ALOE. Aloe Life, call 800-414-2563. Naturally clear skin. Number one in aloe. Aloe Life.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. Most American diets are low in cold water fish that are abundant in important omega-3 oils. DHA and EPA are the vital components of fish oil that provide healthy benefits. Not only are they crucial for brain and vision development, they're very important for cardiovascular health. Carlson, America's leading Norwegian fish oil brand, specializes in both great-tasting soft gels that are easy to swallow and fish oil liquids that don't taste fishy. That's right, Carlson provides the most extensive line of fish oils to meet all your needs. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today. That's right. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today.
Welcome to this edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your host, Josh Lane. And the subject of digestive health is very important to all of us. And occasionally we have a sour stomach, we have a sour taste in our mouth, and it's very uncomfortable. Unfortunately, a large percentage of Americans suffer these issues on a regular basis. And our guest today is Dr. John Pandolfino, who is an MD, and he works with gastrointestinal problems at the Digestive Health Center at Northwestern Medicine. Dr. Pandolfino, welcome to Here's to Your Health.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, very happy to have you on the show. So you are an MD, and where did you receive your undergraduate and graduate degrees?
Sure. I went to undergraduate at University of Chicago. I went to medical school at Loyola, and then came to Northwestern as an intern, and I've been here ever since.
And the idea of, you know, gastrointestinal health, the subject really is GERD, which everyone kind of, you know, knows the term. And I guess it seems to affect, you know, a big number of people in this country. What is the cause of this problem?
So GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, is really a phenomenon where the contents of your stomach, whether that's food, digestive enzymes, acid in particular, move from your stomach up into your chest, maybe your throat, and even into your lungs. And that's really reflective of an anatomical and physiologic problem at the anti-reflux barrier and your defense mechanisms to protect that.
All righty. So that is medical terminology. And it manifests as we have a sour stomach or we have a sour taste in our mouth. Is that the is that what happens to us?
Yeah. So, of course, you know, the stuff that's in your stomach with the acid and the digestive enzymes, it's not very pleasant. So if that ever gets into your mouth, it'll feel and it'll taste pretty sour. And if it gets into your esophagus, you know, you can feel the irritation in the form of burning or chest pain. So that stuff is quite caustic.
All righty. Our guest is Dr. John Pandolfino. He's an MD, and he's working with problems of the gastrointestinal tract, what we commonly call GERD. Dr. Pandolfino, what would you say is, what are the causes of GERD?
So when people talk about GERD, it really is this movement and this change where you get too much of the stuff that's sitting in your stomach and the acid that moves into your chest. And the things that can actually cause that to happen more often in someone with GERD than a normal person is maybe increased weight. So if you gain a little bit of weight, that gives you a little bit more pressure on the stomach, and that pressure pushes things from your stomach into your chest. In addition, that's why we see women who are pregnant tend to get more reflux because of the increased pressure in their abdomen, but also because some of the hormones that are associated with pregnancy actually reduce the pressure of the anti-reflux barrier, which is a muscle that sits at the end of your esophagus.
All righty. I'd never thought of that. Obviously, that seems to be a big factor. So in other words, men and women who are overweight are more prone to problems with GERD.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about something that we all talk about, and that is food as a healing tool. Do foods that we consume or substances such as alcohol, does alcohol contribute to many problems with GERD?
So it's a great question. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about food and GERD. But certainly, there are definitely foods that make reflux and GERD worse. And these can do this in a couple different ways. One way is that it actually causes the stomach to empty a little bit more slowly. And then if your stomach doesn't empty very fast, there's a higher likelihood that the stuff will back up into your esophagus. And then there's, of course, these foods that reduce the pressure in your lower esophageal sphincter. So foods like peppermint, chocolate, maybe some types of alcohol can actually reduce that pressure and allow that muscle to open up more, and then you get reflux. There are some foods that will increase acid in the stomach, but for the most part, it's not so much too much acid. It's actually too much acid moving into your esophagus out of your stomach.
All righty. So when you counsel patients, would you recommend, let's say they're drinking on a regular basis, would you recommend that they cut down or cut out the alcohol?
Well, of course, you know, we always want people to not drink alcohol at a significant amount. But if they're having a glass of wine, you know, once or twice a week, but they don't have reflux associated with that, I don't tell them to stop drinking wine. But if they told me that every time I drink wine, I have reflux and it's bothersome, then I would probably tell them, then, you know, that's probably a good idea. I think the key is to use a personalized approach, because you don't want to take away the joy of eating from somebody. You know, eating is a very important part of life. It's a social activity, being around friends and family. And we really want to be cognizant of the fact that if we do give important dietary advice, that it's focused for each individual patient.
All righty. That makes perfect sense. Our guest is Dr. John Pandolfini. He's an MD, and we're discussing problems with digestion that we call GERD, and how the physicians now are, leading physicians are working with these patients. So are there any medications that you are very happy with?
So yeah, I think with reflux, there are definitely very good medicines that can help target acid. And by reducing the acid level, then of course the irritation and injury that occurs when you reflux will be a lot less. And those medicines can stem from something like regular old antacids, which essentially buffer acid, which just means that it decreases the concentration of the acid. And then you have other medicines like H2 blockers or proton pump inhibitors that actually decrease the secretion of acid. So they actually block acid at the pump in the stomach, and your levels of acid in the stomach will go down.
And when the levels of acid in the stomach go down, the patients feel better?
Yeah, they feel better. So when they reflux and the liquid hits their esophagus or their throat, it's really a lot less caustic and noxious. So, you know, they don't get as bad a taste. It doesn't injure or cause ulcers or erosions of those particular areas.
All righty. Now, here's a subject that, you know, is important. I'm an older man. When I was a teenage boy, you know, everybody drank lots of soda. I don't want to mention any brand names, but lots and lots of soda. And now the sales of soda in the United States, according to Bloomberg Business News, have fallen 1% a year, I think, for the past 17 years. So Americans are drinking less soda. But do diet sodas, sometimes called by my father's generation soda pop, is soda pop a major contributing factor to GERD, in your opinion?
Yeah, so carbonated beverages, in particular soda, certainly can cause more reflux because it pressurizes the stomach, and then people will be belching more. And then when they're belching more, they're more likely to have liquid come up. So certainly we do tell patients who are actually having a lot of belching and reflux to avoid carbonated soda beverages.
And may I ask this question? This maybe sound a little silly. As a physician, when you speak to patients about lifestyle recommendations or about the use of medications, what percentage of the patients actually listen to you?
Well, I certainly would like to think it's more than it probably is. But I think that most of the time, when you give patients lifestyle modification recommendations and their quality of life is being, you know, really destroyed by reflux, I do think patients do follow your advice. I do think people are less likely, though, to take a medication. People don't want to take medications. I think they always view medications as a negative outcome in that, you know, it's disruptive to their daily life. They're worried about side effects. So many times I do think that patients want a fix that's not a medication. You know, once again, even though the medicines that we do have for reflux disease are very safe.
All righty. The reason I asked the question about compliance is because there's always a question when you are a physician and you give patients advice. I guess you're wondering, are the patients really going to do what I suggest? But I guess if people are busy having sour stomach and you know, sour taste in their mouth and they just feel uncomfortable, maybe they're also nauseous or they have problems with gas. I guess they really don't like that. And I guess if you give them recommendations, being a physician, being an MD, people are inclined to listen. But I was just wondering how compliant patients are with something like GERD, which seems to affect, I guess, really up to a third of the American population, which is really a shockingly high number.
Yeah, no, the point you bring up is very valid. I think certainly, like, if you think about high blood pressure, for instance, you know, there are no symptoms associated with high blood pressure. So compliance, you know, patients may think, oh, I don't really need this. But the thing about reflux is that if you're taking your medicine and then you stop taking your medicine, your symptoms come back. So it's almost kind of like a reminder to be compliant. So that's why I think when patients do get a good effect with their medicine, they tend to be on their medicine and they kind of take it and their compliance is pretty good. But as I mentioned, you know, people are always looking for opportunities, though, to get off the medicine. And that's really where, you know, other treatments can work, you know, maybe aggressive lifestyle modification and weight loss. But there are some other endoscopic or surgical procedures that could also be used.
All righty. And so what are the surgical procedures that you have seen to be effective in your patients?
Yeah, so there is a couple different approaches, and they're both minimally invasive. The one approach is something called endoscopic approaches, or TIF, transoral incisionless fundoplication. It's a big word. You can just remember TIF, T-I-F. And that's actually an endoscopic procedure where the doctor will go through the mouth using a scope, just like a colonoscopy scope, and actually suture and recreate the flap valve that prevents reflux from occurring. Similarly, a surgeon can actually go through the abdominal wall with a minimally invasive approach and actually repair the hiatal hernia, which is also a defect in the reflux barrier. They can do a repair there, strengthen up that anti-reflux barrier. And now there's a new device called the magnetic sphincter augmentation device, which is a magnetic ring that they can actually place around the end of the esophagus. And that actually can prevent the reflux from occurring because that sphincter now is strengthened by that magnetic ring.
Wow. So that magnetic ring procedure, is this brand new?
No, it's been around now for, you know, at least 5 to 7 years, you know, in clinical practice where people are doing it. And I think that the data now looks pretty good and people are very comfortable performing this operation.
And now, our guest is Dr. John Pandolfino. He's an MD. Dr. Pandolfino, is your center one of the leading medical, you know, hospitals in the country doing these procedures?
Yeah, so we are a world-renowned esophageal center at Northwestern. We've kind of been a pioneer in many aspects of reflux treatment. We've been funded by the National Institutes of Health to study reflux disease and develop some of these treatments. One of the things that we've focused on even more recently is this brain-gut interaction, where we actually are looking at the triggers of reflux symptoms that are related to stress and what we call visceral anxiety.
And is this an area that where the research has been fruitful?
Yes, very much so. We've been able to identify that patients' underlying stress and anxiety are actually more important in terms of their quality of life than the actual symptoms themselves. And really, it's a combination of the symptoms and their underlying stress that really lead them to have a specific outcome. And if we can attack that with specific therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, hypnosis, and relaxation techniques with diaphragmatic breathing, we can make a major impact in the outcome for these particular patients.
And the patients really, you've had good results. The patients do respond to this. I guess I'll use the word therapy. I mean treatment. You're actually kind of treating the whole person.
Yeah, we've got very good responses. You know, anywhere from 50 to 75% of people will get better. And if you think about that, as opposed to doing nothing or giving a placebo, that's a dramatic improvement in these symptoms. So we believe that you have to treat the whole patient, not just the anatomy and the physiology of the GI tract. You also have to understand that the brain and the gut are both neurologic organs and they talk to each other. And if you ignore the brain, you may only be treating half of the patient.
Right. I agree with that. Our guest is Dr. John Pandolfino. Dr. Pandolfino is an MD. He is the chief of gastroenterology and hepatology at Northwestern Medicine. Dr. Pandolfino, Northwestern Medicine, where is your hospital?
So we're located downtown Chicago, right in the heart of the Magnificent Mile. We've got great facilities all across the Chicagoland and Illinois area. We have 11 hospitals in our system currently.
Wow. Wow. So that's a big organization. And may I ask, how many... You mentioned about one third of the citizens of the United States, adults in the United States, have symptoms of GERD. How many patients does the hospital see over the course of a year who have GERD?
Oh, if you looked at our gastroenterology program, you know, probably, you know, we perform at least 15,000 endoscopies a year for people with reflux disease and complicated disease. But you can imagine at the primary care level, you know, with 30% of the population, they're overwhelmed with these patients. And one of the things that we're working on diligently is providing new techniques and technologies like digital platforms so that we can actually help care for this huge burden of patients that we're seeing with this problem.
Wow. Why, I didn't realize that it was quite that big a scale. Although I should have known, I guess, because, you know, people do love to pop antacids, don't they? And antacids have been popular, what, is it for 30 or 40 years as a temporary remedy?
Yes, they've been very popular, probably one of the most common things you'll see at the drugstore.
But again, I've read that there's a downside to antacids in that they contain aluminum, and over the long haul, the exposure to aluminum can be problematic. Is that what your research supports?
Yeah, I think if you take anything too much, it becomes a problem. And certainly the aluminum in some of the antacids, not all antacids have aluminum. Some of them are just calcium carbonate. But some of the ones that have aluminum can be dangerous, especially for people who have kidney problems. So certainly you want to avoid aluminum-based antacids if you have kidney problems, and also if you have underlying constipation, because they can make people a little bit more constipated.
Oh boy, that's an issue. Okay, that's an issue. Our guest is Dr. John Pandolfino, an MD at Northwestern and Northwestern Medicine in Chicago. Dr. Pandolfino, how can listeners of Here's to Your Health contact you to find out more about your progressive approach to GERD?
Well, certainly we're available through our website at www.nm.org. That's Northwestern Medicine. And if you go to that website and you plug in GERD, you'll be taken to our GERD page, where then you can actually interact with a live interface. We have a chat bot that we call the GERD bot that actually interacts with the patient who's online and can answer a few questions, ask a few questions. And then the patient gets stratified and gets hooked up with the right provider that they'll need to help them with their GERD.
Well, that sounds really very progressive. Our guest has been Dr. John Pandolfino, an MD, and Dr. Pandolfino is the chief of gastroenterology and hepatology at Northwestern Medicine in Chicago, doing work with GERD, which, as it turns out, affects millions of Americans. This is Josh Lane. You're listening to Here's to Your Health. Let me take a short break. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. Most American diets are low in cold water fish that are abundant in important omega-3 oils. DHA and EPA are the vital components of fish oil that provide healthy benefits. Not only are they crucial for brain and vision development, they're very important for cardiovascular health. Carlson, America's leading Norwegian fish oil brand, specializes in both great-tasting soft gels that are easy to swallow and fish oil liquids that don't taste fishy. That's right, Carlson provides the most extensive line of fish oils to meet all your needs. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today. That's right. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today.
Friends, take care of your skin using Aloe Life juice and skin gel. My dry, troubled skin felt better right away. It's my number one choice for beautiful and healthy skin. Using Aloe Life, Aloe Juice, Skin Gel, and Lotion starts soothing and renewing dry skin and oily skin on contact, easing irritations on cracking skin too. Aloe Life Skin Gel is the best therapy without a prescription, feeling soft and smooth, balancing, feeling youthful. Use Aloe Life products, including skin gel, sold nationally at your favorite natural food store and pharmacy. Online, find a store near you at AloeLife.com or call Aloe Life 1-800-414-ALOE. That's 1-800-414-2563. Look and feel your best with Aloe Life.
Welcome to this edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your host, Josh Lane. As Sleeping problems are really an issue in America. Problems with insomnia are really real, and possibly 25 million Americans have problems with sleep. And so our guest today to discuss the topic is Dr. Charlene Gamaldo, who is an MD, professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Gamaldo, welcome to Here's to Your Health.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Very happy to have you on the show. Now, sleep, a lot of people kind of make jokes about sleep, but if you're not sleeping properly at night, it's hard to do a good day's work, and it's certainly hard to drive your car properly. So what are the reasons that people are having problems with sleeping?
You know, so the combination of reasons are sort of endless, and that's what makes my job so exciting, is to try and unpack that for each individual. So we recognize that somebody's sleep experience, the contributors are their overall just genetic makeup in terms of how good a sleeper they're going to be, but it also brings in elements of your current medical state and conditions that may be impacting sleep, and then some of the psychosocial elements. So what your sleep environment looks like, what your sleep surface is like, even down to what your neighborhood may be like in terms of making things more or less conducive to sleep. So all of those things need to be unpacked when we try to get somebody to be the best sleeper they can be.
All righty. Well, that all sounds very good. So as a physician, when people come to see you because they're having trouble sleep, do you ask them lifestyle questions? For example, do diabetic individuals have more problems sleeping than others?
Yes. So absolutely. We ask not just about the fact that diabetes, sleep problems could be contributing to, you know, ability to control your diabetes, but if there are, you know, conditions associated with your diabetes that can affect your overall sleep experience, i.e. if you have to wake up because you have a low sugar, that sort of thing. So it really is bi-directional. It can go in both directions. So the easiest way that I like to do it is just to tell somebody, you know what, take me through a typical evening leading up to sleep and what your sleep experience is like. And that's how we try to unpack it.
All righty. Well, that certainly sounds like a good idea. And I'm sure that patients are happy to, you know, speak to their physician about these health issues. Now, I'm very kind of partial to food as a healing tool. If people are drinking alcohol, is that a problem for many people as far as the ability to go to sleep and remain asleep?
Yes. And I'm going to tie that back into some of the work we're trying to do with the Alliance for Sleep group. And the first step for us to understand where the landscape is for folks suffering from insomnia was to do the survey. And part of that survey was to get an appreciation of what people thought were the ways that they can get better sleep and perhaps bust some of those myths. So this is a great myth that, quote unquote, get the taking a nightcap can help you with sleep. It's not really the case. It may help you to get to sleep immediately, but it actually impacts your ability to stay asleep. So that's just like one of the many myths that hopefully we're trying to dispel with this sort of a public awareness and education initiative.
Our guest is Dr. Charlene Gamaldo, who's an MD, and Dr. Gamaldo is professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University. And they just completed a survey, the Wake Up America survey, that discusses problems with insomnia in the United States. Now, Doc, what do you think we should do as people who are interested in wellness? How should we begin to approach better quality sleep?
For sure. So what our survey did demonstrate, which we were very happy to see, is that not only the general public, where we surveyed 1,000 adults in America, but also non-sleep healthcare providers who are often first line to treat sleep care needs in our population, meaning general practitioners and psychiatrists, all agreed resoundingly that sleep is a pillar for health, and it should be recognized as such. So that's very important. Also note, however, needs to be addressed is when is the time to get a sleep assessment or to talk to a healthcare provider about this. And the three things, the rule of threes that I want your listeners to think about is, if they are having a sleep issue that's going on for more than 3 days a week for over 3 months, and it's directly impacting their ability to function well during the day, it is now classified as a medical condition. That is, insomnia is a medical condition. There are no fancy devices you need to wear, no fancy sleep studies. It's strictly, that's it. You check those boxes. This is now insomnia as a medical condition. And if you check those boxes, you owe it to yourself to feel your best, and you owe it to your long-term health to discuss it with your healthcare provider.
Yes. Yes. I think it's certainly important to speak to our healthcare providers. And our guest is Dr. Charlene Grimaldo, an MD, who is professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University, speaking about sleep. Dr. Grimaldo, the discussion of, for example, taking sleep aids, sleeping pills, which were very popular, I guess, in the 60s or 70s, and have they fallen out of fashion? Is there a stigma involved with using those?
Well, I would say this, Josh, that we're recognizing, you know, alluding back to what I mentioned before, that you can have 500 people with insomnia, but the way they got there and the contributors to it can be very different. So that, for that reason, the way it's treated can be very different as well. And so it can be a combination of behavioral strategies. It can be maximizing your environment, and it can be medical approaches too. So it really has to be personalized for the individual. And i.e., that's why it's really important to talk with your healthcare provider, try to tease that out, and then determine what's the right direction to go. Because at the end of the day, we never jump right to medications in pretty much every situation. You got to also think about what are some of the preventative strategies and the behavioral strategies to accomplish it.
All righty. And then how about exercise? Will the patients listen to you if you suggest exercise?
So exercise is a huge one. And what I love about exercise is it's something that can benefit your health on so many different levels beyond just sleep. But we do, from the standpoint of exercise, discuss the timing of when the exercise is going to give you the best health benefit and perhaps not necessarily impact your ability to fall asleep. So we love exercise, and that's a great place to start because we can time it with your sleep clock.
And by exercise, I was thinking things like, you know, walking. I mean, because really, let's say a patient is not in great health, you know, running is really out of the picture. But do you recommend walking as really just the primary exercise?
If we start with walking, we love it. Anything that gets you to a more active, status than you were before, perfect. And, you know, walking can, especially brisk walking for American Heart Association, can be extremely beneficial for heart health. Where we come in too is to think about when you time that walking, because if it's timed, later in the evening, especially if the sun is still out, that could potentially impact your ability to fall asleep at night, even walking. So that's where it's, you know, the nuances and really personalizing to the individual and their routine and everything else contextually going on is really important.
All righty. So our guest is Dr. Charlene Grimaldo, an MD who's professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University, one of America's premier universities. Now, the organization, the Alliance for Sleep, what are some of the key survey things that you really discovered? And also, you know, when patients come in to see you, is there a standard approach that actually works for many of the patients?
So I would say there is pretty much an established and standard approach to how you take a history and solicit information from your patients, because it really has to be in that multi-pronged approach. But then that really informs your decision on how you personalize that care. So it's pretty much a standard way to get the information, but then what you do for the information with the information is personalized to the patient. And I think what we're appreciating with the Alliance for Sleep is that this cannot be accomplished just with sleep experts alone. There's not enough sleep doctors to really address the demand for sleep care. So it's become very much a collective effort that, you know, we want to be available to provide education, provide resources and tools that makes it more makes it more compatible for our general practitioners and psychiatrists to be able to address this amongst the many other things they may have to address with their patients. So that's really critical. And then the other thing that came out of the survey that was enlightening for me was that everybody recognized, both stakeholders recognized, that sleep should be recognized as a pillar of health, but there was a bit of a disconnect in what the healthcare providers thought was the amount and focus they had on discussing sleep at a patient encounter, and the patient's perception of whether it was discussed or not. There was a disconnect there where patients thought it was covered a lot less than the providers thought it was. So we need to help address closing that gap. And maybe it's providing some tools and resources that can allow the providers to do this in a more intentional and, you know, a lot more obvious way. And also this will allow the patients to feel that their voice is heard. So that's part of our mission, to be able to close that gap.
Our guest is Dr. Charlene Grimaldo, an MD, professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University. We're discussing insomnia, problems with sleep. Dr. Maldo, and in closing, what do you think, what should the patients do? How can we contact you to find out more about the Wake Up America survey and how we can contact you directly, I guess at Johns Hopkins, to really take care of this problem with insomnia?
Absolutely. So I think our first and foremost is increasing awareness, not just of what insomnia, when it qualifies as a medical condition is, but education and awareness on what to do next. So, you know, we've taken Wake Up America survey and provided it online, and it's at the wakeupamericasurvey.com. The results of it can be found there. So it not only can provide information for folks to see that they may not be alone in their sleep troubles, but also provides education on some of the myths that folks may have about sleep, that we can hopefully bust those myths. And then to give folks an insight as to the Alliance and what our mission is to hopefully achieve better sleep health for all. And yes, I am a medical director for the Johns Hopkins Center for Sleep and Wellness. And myself, as well as many members of my consortium, are very, very dedicated to treating sleep care. But we also recognize that it is important that we serve as a resource to our healthcare team who are non-sleep specialists.
Right, right. Sleep is very important. Our guest has been Dr. Charlene Grimaldo, an MD, who's professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University. And we're discussing problems with insomnia, which really affect maybe 25 million Americans. You can't function properly if you're not getting a good quality sleep. This is Josh Lane. You're listening to Here's to Your Health. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after these important messages.
The latest from the greatest, the best in new music by classic rockers, with your host, the insane Daryl Wayne.
This is Alice Cooper, and if Daryl Wayne is insane, what does that make me? Criminally insane. Stick around to find out.
Many of the artist interviews for the latest from the greatest have been captured on audiobook. There is a volume 1 and volume 2. Great information and conversations with people in the industry and people surrounded by the industry, and of course the rock stars themselves.
I'm the Reverend Al Green, and you're listening to the insane Daryl Wayne. And I said Wayne Insane.
You can find it on Amazon or Blackstone Audio. Search for The Latest from the Greatest from Darrell Wayne, DarrellWayne.
Hello, this is Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the insane Darrell Wayne, aren't you?
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Here's to Your Health with Joshua Lane. If you have any questions about the guests or topics discussed tonight, please give us a call at 818-707-0005. That number is 818-707-0005. This is Josh Lane. On behalf of the cast and crew, I would like to wish you a healthy and safe good evening.